I wanted to talk about creating a legacy. So what kind of legacy are we wanting to create? Most of us, we talk about receiving a legacy or leaving a legacy, and it's great to leave a legacy. But to leave a legacy, you actually have to create one in the first place. And so I want to talk about leaving a legacy. And the thing is that our life is a bit like a journey. I know that's kind of a bit of an overused simile for it, but our life is a little bit like a journey, and stuff happens. And some of us live our journey more planned than others. Some of us are much more flexible. And so when we're thinking about creating a legacy, we're really just creating a plan for our life that is going to allow us to do what God's called us to do. And then hopefully out of that, we will have created something that we pass on to the generations. I was talking to my sister through the week, and she said to me, "Oh, me who is trying to declutter my house, I have a box and stuff for you that was grandma's." Oh, glory. Great. I'm so excited about that. I said, great. I'm not going to pick it up just yet because I don't have any room for it. I'm trying to get rid of stuff out of my house, not bring stuff in. So the real thing is that I remember my grandma not through the stuff that she had. I've got some of her stuff and I see it and it reminds me of her. But the things that I really remember about my grandparents are the times that we had together and the things that we did together. And when I was little, probably around about Joel's age, standing up on her, I don't know if you remember the bread bin, standing up on a bread bin, watching her cook. She only lived a couple of houses away from us. She was a great cook. Unfortunately, I didn't pick up on that part of it, but my daughter did, so that's okay. She might have got it from her mother and my mother-in-law, though, so it might have come through the other side of the family. But the things that I remember most are the times I spent with my grandparents, not so much the things that they had or that they've passed on to me. And so when we're creating a legacy, I want to sort of talk about in the things of what are the memories that we're going to create? What are we going to do? And planning does have its place. I mean, we do a lot of planning. We run a community organisation. You've got to plan. In life, you have to plan. If you want to go anywhere, you actually have to make a plan to get there. Even if you're a fairly flexible person, when I travelled overseas a number of years ago, we didn't always know exactly where we were going to be staying, but we had a basic plan in our head of where we wanted to go and how we wanted to get there. Because if you don't plan, you're going to end up on a plane to the place you didn't want to go to. And so you need to plan, but you also need to be flexible. When we travelled recently, we had planned to travel through a particular airport home and we missed our flight. So you've got to be flexible enough to change your plans if you need to. And so when we're building a legacy, it's about making plans, but also being flexible enough to allow for different situations that might actually tweak that plan a little bit. And so there's a scripture verse here, Isaiah 32:8, and it says, "An honourable man makes honourable plans. His honourable character gives him security." And so making plans is actually a good thing to do, to make plans. It says it's an honourable thing to do, that honourable people make plans. Now, I'm not a great detail person. I'm a much bigger picture person, and I know others are detailed. And, you know, there's people, and we need them in our lives, who want to make sure that every T is crossed and every I is dotted. And as I was writing that, I thought, what about every J? Most J's need to be dotted as well. Did you know that? Most J's need to be dotted. So really it should be crossing every I, J, and crossing every T and dotting every I and J, just in case you wanted to be pedantic. But I'm not really a great detail person, but I've learned the value of a good plan. I've learned the value of a good plan. My natural self would be much more flexible, take each day as it comes, not plan too much, and, you know, let's go enjoy it. But in the end, that you don't actually get anywhere doing that. You don't achieve anything doing that. You get up in the morning, you go to bed at night, and nothing's happened. We need to plan if we're going to do what God's called us to do and if we're going to leave a legacy for people. We need to be moving in the right direction. You know, for our community initiatives program, we have a direction that we're heading. We have a vision, we have a mission, we have a purpose. And basically, if it doesn't fit into those things, then we don't do them because it distracts us from where God's calling us to go with those things. But that doesn't mean we don't add things in or that we don't start different programs or build different areas into it. It just means that when we do, they have to fit the direction and the plan that we're going. And so when we're creating a legacy, it's really about saying, this is where we're going, but being flexible enough to bring other people into that. See, in our family, we have three children. They're all adults now. We've been flexible enough to bring extra people into that family. A few of them are here today. And you bring extra people into the family. When we all got married, we brought extra people into the family. And so you'd be flexible with that. If you were absolutely rigid and this is our family, well, then you'd end up with your own little sect and nothing would happen. And life would be very, very boring and there would be no legacy whatsoever. And so it's really about being flexible enough. Jesus talked about, and I haven't got the scripture, I think it's in Luke somewhere, but Jesus talked about if you're going to build a tower, you need to count the cost. You need to plan it, you need to... And I can tell you that when we've come to looking at redoing this building, we've been sitting down and planning and counting the cost, making sure that we can actually do it in a way that is actually going to be really good and work, because we want here to be a place where the generations can gather down the track. Not for the building's sake, but for the people who will come and find the grace of God within the family here. And so that is really important. And one of the things that I did that, I've got a few points later on, but one of the things that I did that I found really helpful was to create a life plan. Who's ever done a life plan? I don't know if any of you, my husband has. Yeah, so most of you probably haven't done it. But I came across this coaching thing. It was about doing a life plan. And I thought, okay, so the idea is that you work out what your purpose is. So it's different for everybody. You work out what your purpose is and you do a life plan. You pray about it, you seek God about it, but you start with writing what you... This is where it gets a bit creepy, but you start with writing what you think your eulogy would be if you passed on. What would... See, the reason you do that is because you need to know where you're at now. If you're going to write a plan... You need to know where you're up to. What would people say about me? What would people say about you? I actually went to a funeral on Friday, and as far as funerals go, it was a very nice one. It was honouring of the person who had died, and it was a really lovely tribute to their life. What would people say about me if I went today? I'm planning on staying around, guys, but what would people say? I'm not sure if this is true, but I think one of my sons would say, Mum always wanted a clean house, but it never quite made it. Mum always wanted to declutter, but she never quite got there. This is transfers from one room to the other. I hope, actually, it would be more about who I was as a person and what my character was, rather than the things that I have. But it's a really good starting point, and it makes you think. It sounds awful, but it actually makes you think, who are the important people? Not what's important, but who. Who are the important people in your life? Who are the people that you actually relate to and want to do life with? Who are the people in your life that are being positive and building up and helping you move forward? And who are the people that you're loving and caring and building up and helping them move forward? Who are the people that are really important? And so when you've written that out and you've thought about who the people that are important are, you just keep thinking about who else might be important, because life is not about the what's, it's about the who. It's about the who is in our lives that we relate to. It's our family and friends. It's the people we work with. It's the not so much the what's we have, but the who. So during Christmas, we were having a conversation with my mum about, and obviously my mum's just turned 80, so over her lifespan, she's had a number of cars. I was quite surprised to find there was a couple that she actually didn't even remember. She didn't remember the car. But can I tell you, she remembered a situation where she was with all of us in the car, where the number plate got stolen. The memory and the shared experience of having to deal with that is more memorable than what make or model that car actually was. And in our lives, we put so much on. You've got to have the new car and you've got to have this make and this model and whatever else. And Rod was actually addressing some of that this morning. It's not about all of that stuff that we have. It's actually about who were we in that car with and what memories were we making while we were in that car. And I can tell you, we were at Cronulla Beach, or one of the Cronulla beaches. There are so many, but we were at Cronulla Beach at a park. We'd been out and we'd had lunch together and we came back, the number plate was missing. Now, Mum doesn't remember the car, but she remembers that time that we shared together. And that's the important thing, because it's who we spent time with, not the what that we were there for. You know, the Bible talks a lot about shared life experience. There's a lot of times where it says these promises are for your children and your children's children. That, you know, the salvation has come and it's for your children and your children's children. That the message goes on and on and on down the generations. It's not about what material things you have. That was to be shared to allow people to live and grow. But down the generations, it was what you left to your children and your children's children. That you speak the word and you pass it on and you create a legacy that goes on and on and on. Most of us have a very mixed bag for a legacy that was created for us. Who lives in a family that is really absolutely perfect? Oh, Josh does. Thanks, mate. No family is perfect. No family is perfect. No legacy that we've received is perfect. It's a mixed bag. We've received some really great stuff, and some of us have received some really crappy stuff. Excuse the expression. Some of us have received some really horrible stuff in our legacy. But I want to say to every single person here today, you have the opportunity to say right now that that bad legacy does not have to continue. And that today, on the 7th of January 2018, got the date right, that today you can start to create a new legacy for your children, your children's children. They don't have to be physical children. They can be your spiritual children, the people you do life with. The legacy that you leave is always more than just the physical family. We can look back and go, you know, that wasn't great. What have we learned from it? What have we learned from it, and how are we going to move forward from it? There's all sorts of things that we can learn. If the legacy hasn't been great, maybe we've learnt lots of things not to do, and we can practice learning all the things that we would like to do. Easier said than done, but I think it's a good start. What have we learnt from the past, good, bad or otherwise, that we can then continue on into the future? So begin to create a new legacy. Isaiah 43, 15 to 21 says this, "I am the Lord, your Holy One, the one who created Israel, your King. This is what the Lord says, the one who made a road through the sea, a pathway through the surging waters, the one who led chariots and horses to destruction, together with a mighty army. They fell down, never to rise again. They were extinguished, put out like a burning wick. Don't remember these earlier events. Don't recall these former events. Look, I'm about to do something new. Now it begins to happen. Do you not recognize it? Yes, I will make a road in the desert and paths in the wilderness. The wild animals of the desert honour me, the jackals and the ostriches, because I put water in the desert and streams in the wilderness to quench the thirst of my chosen people, the people whom I formed for myself so they might praise me." What was God saying there? He was saying, you've got a legacy, guys. And their legacy was a pretty good one. Their legacy was that God had saved them, that God had brought them out of captivity in miraculous circumstances. He had parted the sea, and the chariots and the people in the chariots have been completely drowned. And God says, don't even remember that. To me, that's a lot. We think about that all the time. Like, God says, that actually is not that important, because I'm doing a new thing. I'm starting a new thing. And of course, he went on and Jesus came, and we have a whole new dispensation of grace and love, and he's doing a thing. But God is constantly doing new things in our lives. God is constantly moving us forward, and he wants to say to us, don't dwell on what was in the past. Don't dwell on what was maybe even a really, really good thing in the past. Don't dwell on it, because your future is actually more important than your past. The thing that you are going to do and the thing that God is going to do through you is more important than what he has already done, because he is still at work and he's creating a new thing. And it actually says, don't you already see it? It's not that it's about to happen tomorrow. God is already doing it in our lives. He is already creating new stuff all the time in our lives. So the reality is that you know, most of us have things that we treasure in our legacy, and most of us have things that we'd like to maintain and keep through, and traditions and things like that. But a lot of us have stuff that we don't want to keep. So I want to say to us today, let's make sure that as we move forward, that we don't dwell on those former things. Don't dwell on the things of the past. God says, forget them. Move forward. Because the stuff that happened, yeah, it's there. What do we learn from it? Let's move forward. So we get to choose. We got to choose. Last week, Luke spoke on God's wisdom. And do you remember that little bit at the end where he talked about the filter? Was it James? I think it says has this filter. So I actually thought that that was a really good way of thinking about our legacy. Does it fit into that filter of what Luke was talking about? Because it says that God's wisdom is good and right and lovely, and I can't remember the words now, but it talks about was it peacemaking and all those kind of things. So let's have a legacy that fits into all of those criteria. So I guess the first point out of all of that is, if we're going to create a legacy, then how we live is important. How we live is important. The way we live becomes the message to others. So with people, it's really about the way we live and the words we speak, isn't it? It's not about the stuff that we have. Most people probably don't care that I have a Mitsubishi ASX blue. I like it. I think it's a nice little car. Most people probably don't care about that. They will care if I'm nasty to them. They will care if I'm nice to them. People care about how we respond and about how we live. Our life may be the only message that other people get about the love of grace of God. And so how we live and the legacy we leave is important. So ultimately, people remember the way we lived. And sometimes the way we lived even more than the words we spoke. But words are powerful. Words are really important. And when we're creating a legacy, I think it's really important to remember the words we speak will be remembered. Because words, a proverb says that words can be life-giving or words can be wounding. And I want to encourage us this year, as we create a legacy, to have life-giving words that create a positive legacy for those around us, rather than negative words. So try and get rid of criticism and all of those kinds of things, so that when we speak about people, we're actually speaking positively about them. Does that mean that we just ignore all the other stuff that's going on? No, deal with that and maybe gently speak to them about that if you're in a place to be able to do so. But let's speak words of life over people, words of life that lift them up and encourage them and love them. I have heard so many stories over the years of people that have been absolutely stifled in their life because of a word maybe that a teacher spoke over them or that a parent spoke. They have remembered that word. And it takes the grace of God to break the power of those words. Let's not be the person that says that word. Let's be the person that speaks the positive word over someone's life that creates a positive thought and a positive mindset in them. Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6 says, "Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunities. Let your speech always be gracious." Oh, I find that so hard. "Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you should answer everyone." Gracious speech is so, so difficult, isn't it? At least I find it. Maybe you are much more gracious than me. Gracious speech is really, really difficult at times. You know, somebody presses that button and, man, we just, out comes a whole lot of stuff. Are you all like me? Like, do you, I think maybe you don't have those same buttons. Yeah. Who here is very gracious when they get cut off in the traffic? Whose first response when they get cut off in the traffic is, "Glory to God, I'm so pleased that happened"? I'd like to say that it was mine, but it's not. My first response is, "Who the heck do they think they are? What the heck do they think they're doing?" And then God usually gently reminds me that my driving isn't always perfect and that I might have accidentally cut someone off just recently, and that none of us are perfect. But gracious speech all the time. That's a big ask, isn't it? But the way we live, gracious speech. So I think you probably have the right to pull me up if I'm not gracious in my speech towards you this year. I will try and be gracious. Even when I have to correct, I will be trying to be gracious in my speech. gracious speech is actually really hard. I think, you know, Paul is saying that our lives and the way we live our lives is really, really important, because the world around us is looking and watching and seeing how we live. Our children watch and see how we live. You can tell who taught the children in our family to drive by the way they drive and the words they speak when they drive. At least I think it's probably settled out now, because they're all older and they've all been driving for a while, so God's had a chance to work on them. Get rid of the... Sorry for all of those who had mum teach them. But it's really interesting, isn't it? I was driving with one of the kids and they said, "Oh, I wish the car in front of just keep the speed limit." Oops. How many times must I have said that? They didn't just think of that on that day. That was something that had been conditioned. That was a legacy that had been left in them. How often does your child... we've seen it. A few of us here have two-year-olds. Aren't two-year-olds fabulous people? How wonderful. But who's ever watched their two-year-old stomp their foot and point their finger at you like this? And then you kind of go, "Oh, maybe I do that too." It's really interesting that the way we live and the words we speak are picked up by other people, and so we are creating a legacy around us all the time. And so stuff that my parents did got passed on to me, and I've had to learn to not do some of that stuff, and I've also learned to take on board some of the stuff that was great. I've passed on stuff to my kids. Some of that's been fabulous, and some of it hasn't been. But the gracious speech and the seasoned with salt. Salt brings out the flavour, doesn't it? If you put salt on something, it brings out... I like salt. Anybody here else like salt? Yeah. Salt's probably not good for your heart, but I like salt. So anything with salt on it, peanuts, chips, I would just eat the lot. So I have to learn not to. But salt brings out the flavour, which is why we like it, isn't it? And when something is salty, what happens? You want more of it, and you want more of it. And Paul is saying, let your speech be gracious and seasoned with salt, so that people want more of your gracious speech and more of who God is, rather than more of ungracious speech. Nobody wants more ungracious speech. Can I just say that now? Nobody wants to hear ungracious speech. We all like gracious speech, but we're not always good at giving gracious speech. So how we live and the words we say. The other thing I want to say in creating a legacy is that it's really important to do it together. We gather together as family. We gather together as family. Oh, my notes have just disappeared. Come back. We gather together as family. And this morning we have a gathering together of a number of our faith communities and others who have gathered with us this morning to worship God and to love God. It's a community of people and a community of faith. We need our community of faith to build a positive and strong legacy. God never wants us to live our Christian life as a hermit stuck out in the middle of nowhere. Time aside to reflect is important, but we should always be gathering back together for community, for togetherness. I think that's really, really important. We need God and we need people. Life is not meant to be lived in solitary confinement. You see what happens to people who are shut up in solitary confinement? It's horrendous. And yet some of us willingly separate ourselves out and put ourselves in solitary confinement away from where God wants us to be. We separate ourselves out. Now, there's a lot of reasons why people do that. But I want to encourage us as community to make decisions when we're feeling like we want to separate ourselves out, to actually make a decision not to. It can be hard sometimes, but to make a decision not to. The early church lived in a community of faith. In Acts 2:42, we read how they lived in community with each other. It says they devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship. Devoting themselves to fellowship. They were devoting themselves, making an effort, being deliberate about getting together. Not just a big gathering like this, but in fellowship at a lot of different times. It says, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Reverential awe came over everyone, and many wonders and miraculous signs came about by the apostles. All who believed were together and held everything in common, and they began selling their property and possessions and distributing the proceeds to everyone as anyone had need. Every day they continued to gather together by common consent in the temple courts, breaking bread from house to house, sharing their food with glad and humble hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And the Lord was adding to their number every day those who were being saved. It's probably a whole other message, but what I love about that is it talks about them gathering together in the big gathering like this and how important that was. They gathered in the temple to worship God, but they also met from house to house. They met in smaller gatherings. They ate together. They had food together. Look, I understand that life is very different 2,000 years later to the time of Jesus, but I think that there is a lot to be gained by looking at this model and saying, if we're going to create a legacy for people, and if we're going to build a legacy that is going to last for our children and our children's children and down the generations, then gathering together so that they learn to gather together, gathering together so that they see that it's not just the old people or the young people that love God, that they see it's a community of generations. The Christian faith is meant to be multi-generational and multicultural. Like, it's meant to be everybody. And so gathering together is really important. And I know for myself, sometimes there's times, you know what it's like, you've come home, it's tired, it's hot, you don't want to go anywhere, you'd just rather stay in the air conditioning at home. Okay, it's just me. I can tell by all your faces. It's just me that's like that. But that's okay. But we make the effort. Our faith community usually meets on a Wednesday night. And sometimes I'm tired, and sometimes I've got to think about what to bring. And anyone knows me, trying to find something to bring for food is not easy. But we do it because it's important. And I know when I gather together with my faith community that I will find love and grace and support and sometimes correction, but it will be there in an environment with people who care about me and who love me. And I may not always agree with everything that is said or done, but I don't have to, because it's a community of people who are different, and it's a community of people who are gathering together for a common purpose, and it's to love God and to build a life of discipleship and faith that allows us to grow in the grace of God and allows other people to discover the grace of God. And I think that's really important. See, we discover the grace of God for ourselves, don't we, in those hard times when we gather together. God's grace is there for us. But there are lots and lots and lots of people, the last time I looked, who have no idea about the grace of God in this world. And together as a community of faith, we can engage with them and love them and care for them in a way that helps them discover the grace of God in their own lives. And so as we head into this year, and as we think about what it is that we're going to be doing this year, if we can remember to think about how we live with gracious speech and to gather together regularly in community, then you actually find that you'll create a legacy pretty easily. You won't have to work too hard at it if you just make a couple of really good decisions around those things. Psalm 23 is one of, you know, we read it all the time, and it's really easy to gloss over, isn't it? You know, the Lord is my shepherd, nothing shall I lack. Who, when they were a kid, the old version, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, went, why would I not want God? Yeah, I like the newer translations. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. Sounds so much better. Psalm 23, verses 1 to 4. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He takes me to lush pastures. He leads me to refreshing water. He restores my soul. He leads me down the right paths for the sake of his reputation. Even when I must walk through the darkest valley, I fear no danger, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff reassure me. I'm really looking forward to 2018. But I know one of the things I have learned from the past is that stuff happens. And stuff always happens at the most inconvenient time. You know? It does. Stuff happens when you have 1,000 things on and you've got it all planned out, and then an older relative has the temerity to go and die on you. You've got to organise a funeral. You know? Stuff happens. We get sick. Things go wrong. Last year, our family hardly ever gets sick. Can I just say, 2017 is best forgotten. Man alive, we had some awful stuff happen. Because stuff happens in life. But when we do life with God and we do life in community, then the weight of that stuff is lessened and the grace of God has a chance to work. So I want to encourage us today as we come to the end to think about three things, three questions I'm just going to leave with you. I have no answer to these. You can work them out for yourself. Who is important in your life? Why? Why are they important? Who is important in your life? What shared experiences would you like to create going into the future? And who will you journey with? So which faith community will you connect with this year? Who will you do the journey with this year? So who's important in your life? So when you're thinking about who's important in your life, that will be different for every single person. Every person is important to God, and every person is important to us. But there are people that God is asking you to do life's journey with. Who are they in your life? There will be people that you have in your life that I don't know, and I have people in my life that you don't know. But who is God calling us? Who are those people that God is calling us? Who are the important people? What are the shared experiences? What kind of planning would you like to do with those? You know, planning sounds like a shared experience is a much nicer feel. What kinds of things would you like to do together with them? And which faith community will you connect with? Because life isn't meant to be done alone. So I'm just going to leave you with those three questions. We're going to pray, and we're going to just ask God to bless our year.